Our intention these next few weeks during our expanding sanctuary series is to spend time listening to the scriptures as they guide our thinking, shaped by our theology, to be a sanctuary church. So that when we're asked by our coworkers and friends and family members at the dinner table, we can speak from the depths of who we are about a sanctuary God. A God who, as Pastor Elijah so eloquently described for us last week, has shaped all of creation to be a sanctuary, perpetually removing the borders we falsely constructed that keep us apart. This week, we particularly press into the concept of accompaniment. Within the sanctuary movement, accompaniment is the act of joining or journeying with, i.e., accompanying, someone to their immigration and customs enforcement or ICE check-in. This is meant to offer both symbolic and real-time solidarity. Should someone be detained at their check-in, like Liliana Cruz Mendez was just a couple of weeks ago here in the DMV, allies are able to respond quickly and forthrightly, calling elected officials, protesting the detainment, and seeking immediate legal aid for family members as soon as possible. This act of accompanying ensures that when someone is placed before the powers and principalities of the world, they don't have to do it alone. They don't have to do it alone. The gospel lesson this morning has words for us about accompaniment, too, about making sure that we, particularly the harassed and helpless among us, don't have to wander alone on the journey towards justice. In this moment, we find Jesus preparing his disciples for the inevitable outcome of their mission as he offers some pretty practical advice, some straight talk, about what they will face. Because if they are preparing to go out and speak this liberating gospel to a world bound up in its own self-preservation at the cost of human lives, we know full well it's going to get ugly for them. Fast. See, I'm sending you out like sheep into the midst of wolves. Beware of them, for they will hand you over to councils and flog you in their religious buildings, and you will be dragged before governors and kings and ICE directors and presidents because of me. When they hand you over, do not worry about how you are to speak or what you are to say. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. And he has some choice words about what will happen to the cities and countries and communities that refuse to welcome, respond to, and be transformed by the good news. Truly, I tell you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah on the day of judgment than for that town. Sodom and Gomorrah. The land that violently refused to welcome hitchhikers speaking on behalf of the harassed and helpless. The land that refused to care for sojourners who might just be disguised as the image of the divine among them. The land that chose its own lust for power and protection over the dignity of strangers. The land that went down in a blaze of infamy. The land that chose isolationism over accompaniment. Power over hospitality and the rule of law, code for heartless brutality over unfettered compassion. The land whose own inability to care for and uphold the dignity of the hitchhiker, the wayfarer, the sojourner, left them vulnerable to their own demise. Let's not get it twisted about what Sodom and Gomorrah is actually symbolic of. When Sally and I fell in love with each other, we both had to have a series of, shall we say, difficult conversations with close friends and family. Every moment of each conversation was terrifying, disorienting, overwhelming, and bone-crushingly exhausting. Try putting all of that on the How We Fell in Love section of our wedding website. For those of you who have had to come out, you know what I'm talking about. You imagine every possible outcome, consternate over every word you will or won't say, pray that no matter what, you'll still love yourself, even if the people who know you most deeply reject you most emphatically. As I prepared for one particularly difficult conversation, one of my pastors, who some of you had the chance to meet at our installation service, Dorsan Cooper, drove me to the house where I would be gathering with some friends and family members to share this most important and beloved part of my story, to share the good news about a kingdom that had come near to me, that was curing my sickness and raising what was dead within me. And as I sat there trembling, my coming out letter resting in my lap, Doris Ann looked at me, smiled, and of course, as all good pastors do, quoted Winston Churchill. "Well, Maria, if you're going through hell, keep going." As I found myself remembering that moment this week, I felt again how desperately I needed a fellow disciple and friend in the car with me as I hitchhiked my way into hell. How desperately I needed to be accompanied into Sodom and Gomorrah. How desperately we all need to be accompanied through this life. How desperately we need Jesus and our friends to remind us that if anyone will not welcome you or listen to your words, shake off the dust from your feet as you leave that house or town. As Jesus gathers his rat pack of disciples together, he knows full well that Matthew the tax collector and Simon the zealot, the radical, are going to need each other if they're going to heal the sick and demand a just healthcare system and proclaim things like Black Lives Matter and protest travel bans and serve the poor with gladness and disrupt the workings of the empire. Jesus knows that Peter, the day laborer, and Judas, the treasurer, are going to need each other if they're going to show up at ICE check-ins and senators' offices and bedsides and mental health hospitals. Jesus knows that the disciples hitchhiking for justice and mutuality will find themselves harassed and helpless over and over again. They will go through hell and back more times than they can count. But not alone. Not if he has anything to say about it. Just this week in a congressional subcommittee hearing, the acting director of ICE said, and I quote, "If you're in this country illegally, you should be uncomfortable. You should look over your shoulder. You need to be worried." Just this week, Philando Castile's shooter was acquitted of all charges. Just this week, I watched a teenage girl of Indian descent in my neighborhood endure the belligerent screams of someone at the bus stop, "Go back to your country!" While I held her until she stopped shaking and could breathe normally again. So easy to feel alone, unless we show up for each other. It's so easy to imagine that the journey with Jesus is impossible unless we accompany one another on that journey. It's so easy to shake with fear about the towns that don't welcome us unless we have a brother and sister and friend that shakes the dust off with us. Something radical happens when we accompany each other. At this point, we've been asked once or twice now what our vision for the church is as pastors. I can't tell you how many times another good word from Doris Ann Cooper keeps ringing in my ear. She told us that in the first few months, people are going to ask you over and over again what your vision is for the church. And if you already have an answer for them, they should fire you. Because there's no way you know what you are talking about a few months in. And if one thing is true at this point, I can emphatically profess that that is. Even still, Sally and I hear the question, and the depth of desire rooted in that question. We're listening, we promise, we're searching, we're asking that question with you. So here's a part of the vision, for what it's worth. I see us being a church that accompanies black and brown people on a day like today, the Sunday after another shooter is acquitted, and once again, it feels impossible for people of color to keep walking forward, to even imagine trusting the world around them, to feel like they can catch their breath for 1 second before imagining death yet again. I see us being a church that lets black and brown people honestly lament Philando Castile and Sandra Bland and Jordan Edwards with their actual bodies, their tears, and their own stories of helplessness and harassment. I see us being a church that knows how to hold space for people whose immigration status keeps them up at night. I see us being a church where white folks do the hard work of building enough trust to cultivate that kind of freedom. I see us being a church that accompanies one another through our grief and uncertainty, through our treacherous hitchhikes on roads of injustice and gnawing insecurity. I see us being a church that knows each other so intimately, so deeply, that when we hear about an issue of injustice, it's no longer an issue for us because our family members' faces are flashing before our eyes. I see us being a church that is so steeped in one another's particular experiences that we can't help but show up and show out for each other. We can't help but bring our bodies and lives into one another's bodies and lives. I see us being a church that doesn't wear ourselves out trying to be all things to all people and sign up for every cause under the sun, but instead imagine what it means to faithfully accompany each other through the living of our embodied days, right here, right now. I see us being a church that deeply understands and acknowledges why a zealot might not trust a tax collector, and a day laborer might not trust a treasurer, because there's a world of history between them that merits such distrust. I see us being a church that deeply understands and acknowledges that Jesus, God love him, still puts tax collectors and zealots, day laborers and treasurers on the road together, still calls them disciples, still presses them and presses us onward and inward, knowing that our salvation is bound up in one another's salvation. I see us being a church that confounds people's thinking, their constructs and expectations about how the world should work. A church that people all over DC can't make sense of, but can't help but want to be a part of. I see us being an accompanying church. Finds ourselves wrapped up in, overturned by, disrupted, and revived by the good news of Jesus Christ, ready to walk together, ready to withstand persecution and rejection on one another's behalf, and shake the dust off as we go. Amen.